Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 17th of May 2014, and my name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show. In today's show, we are going to be covering some Australian stories. I've got quite a few stories to run through with you today, and I'm also going to be playing to you some clips from videos and TV material which is related to those stories, which I think you will find very, very interesting indeed. We're going to start off looking at the controversy over ABC Australia's Catalyst program, which did an incredible job, and a very fine job indeed, of journalism debunking the use of heart drugs, statins. And the show was done over two episodes in which many, many experts were consulted. And in the second episode, they actually went into the problems with the drugs and the incredible profits that are attached to the sales of these drugs. But of course, all this created an enormous backlash from the regulatory authorities, and one would presume behind that the drug manufacturers themselves, because as we know, they wield such incredible power and incredible influence. And it is indeed rare to see such a great job of investigative journalism being done from within the ABC. We've seen so much bad journalism being done, and it's very sad to see the program under fire and possibly people involved in it having their careers jeopardized. So I want to, later in the show, play to you some extended clips from those shows, because I think they're very important, and our listeners overseas may not be aware of these programs. There will also be links to the YouTube videos on the website. However, I can't guarantee how long those YouTube videos will be there, because the programs have already been scrubbed from the ABC's own website, and there is such pressure to suppress this information that I would not be surprised if the YouTube videos mysteriously disappear soon as well. So I think it's very important to capture this material and to spread it, because the exposing of the scam over anti-cholesterol medications is very, very important, and it's a huge money-making issue for the big cartels, and it is just one step towards restoring truth to the whole question about health and self medication, how we deal with the fact that that so many different drugs are being pushed on us by doctors, and behind that, of course, this incredible industry of drugs. So let me just read to you here from a couple of recent stories. This is actually from last year, but we'll follow that up with a much more recent one. The Heart Foundation warns patients stopping anti-cholesterol drugs and statins. The Heart Foundation says it has hard evidence that patients are stopping or changing their medication as a direct result of the ABC's controversial Catalyst programs on heart disease. The October programs questioned the link between a heart disease and cholesterol, as well as the widespread use of anti-cholesterol drugs known as statins. The programs prompted a backlash, particularly from doctors and specialists who say statins have been clinically proven to cut the risk of heart disease. A Heart Foundation survey of more than 1,000 Australians taking statins has found that almost 1 in 10 people have stopped taking their prescribed medication because of the program. From those results, it estimates that up to 55,000 patients may have stopped taking statins. The charity fears that could cause up to 3,000 additional heart attacks and strokes over the next 5 years. Now, it's interesting, they call it a charity, but we do know that that these organisations are very, very closely connected to the pharmaceutical industry. Of course, they get an enormous amount of money from donations, from government subsidies, and they're also got a very, very revolving door relationship with big pharmaceutical industry players. Now, let me just follow this up with a more recent story. This is from the 13th of May, 2014. ABC's Catalyst program on statins and heart disease breached impartiality standards, investigation finds. A Catalyst episode on heart disease last year breached the ABC's standards on impartiality. And this is a finding from the ABC's Corporation Independent Watchdog. The two-part program on statins and heart disease, which aired in October last year and was collectively entitled Heart of the Matter, prompted a number of complaints. In a statement released today, that's dated 13th of May, ABC Managing Director Mart Scott said an investigation by the ABC's Independent Audience and Consumer Affairs Unit into the episodes has been detailed and thorough. While acknowledging the importance of public health issues relating to the efficacy of heart disease treatment and the contrasting opinions of highly qualified scientists, the ANCA has concluded that the second episode breaches ABC's standards on impartiality. Now, I've actually watched these episodes, and what I can tell you is that they do have a strong message. But the strong message is backed up by a barrage of expert opinion. Of course, every news story, every documentary has to have a position that it starts from. The position that it starts from is that the science on cholesterol and heart disease is flawed. Now, it went to air. The documentaries were obviously approved before they went to air. But under this incredible pressure and backlash from the pharmaceutical industry, well, we're now told that that they're not good, that they've breached impartiality standards. Well, in hour two of today's show, I'm going to play to you episodes one and two of that program as much as that I can fit in to the second hour, and I want you to be the judge. And of course, you're welcome to find it on YouTube as well. But for our radio listeners, I will cram as much of that material into the second hour as I can possibly fit. I think these shows are extremely important, so do stay tuned for that in the second hour. Extremely important material, and it's really, really great to see the national broadcaster doing its proper job. Engaging in real investigative journalism and asking tough questions and challenging the status quo. So I hope that those involved do not have their careers destroyed. I hope they are not totally crushed by the furious backlash that's followed from this. But we do have to consider that that is a possibility. So let's just move on with some more stories from Australia for this week. There is information that has come through about the collapse of the Western Antarctic ice sheet. This, of course, is not strictly Australian news. I apologise for implying that. Although Antarctica being fairly close to Australia, and a large part of the territory there being Australian, you could possibly argue that it is somewhat Australian-oriented news. The Western Antarctic ice sheet collapse has already begun, scientists warn. Two separate studies confirm a loss of ice sheet is inevitable and will cause up to 4 metres of additional sea level rise. The collapse of the Western Antarctica ice sheet is already underway and is unstoppable, two separate teams of scientists said on Monday. The glacier's retreat is being driven by climate change and is already causing sea level rise at a much faster rate than scientists had anticipated. The loss of the entire Western Antarctica ice sheet could eventually cause up to 4 metres of sea level rise, devastating low-lying and coastal areas around the world. But researchers said that even though such a rise could not be stopped, it is still several centuries off and potentially up to 1,000 years away. Now, of course, those last points there are extremely important for this story, but have largely been lost from most of the news coverage on this, which has been quite hysterical, saying that the collapse of the Western Antarctic ice sheet is actually a catastrophe that is underway, and of course using it as proof that the catastrophic global warming is already with us. Now, I just want to run through a few points with you that that I have researched, which give you a slightly different perspective on this whole business of the collapse of the Western Antarctic ice sheet. Now, if you look at the actual photographs of the Western Antarctic ice sheet, you will actually see, if you see the big picture, you'll see that the Western Antarctic ice sheet occupies probably less than one-fifth of the land mass of Antarctica, and it is actually completely dwarfed by the Eastern Antarctic ice sheet. And the Eastern Antarctic ice sheet, it turns out, is actually growing. There are a number of reports that have been done recently that also suggest that the overall ice thickness of Antarctica is actually increasing. I've got a report here from a NASA workshop which examined the mass balance of the Antarctic ice sheet, the overall Antarctic ice sheet, from 1992 to 2008. And it says here that during 2003 to 2008, the mass gain of the Antarctic ice sheet exceeded the loss from ice by 43 gigatons per year. And the 101 gigaton per year gain in East Antarctica and the 68 gigabyte per year gain in four drainage systems of the West Antarctic exceeded combined losses of 98 gigabytes per year from the three coastal regions of West Antarctica. And it says here, persistent dynamic thickening contributed to more than 170 gigatons to the net positive balance in both periods. During both periods, regional changes driven by short-term accumulation are small compared to dynamic changes. Although recent increases in dynamic thinning have been partially offset by accumulation increases, continuation at similar rates would initiate small Antarctic contributions to sea level rise within a decade. Well, of course, that's a little confusing, but the basic message here is that there has been a net increase in ice mass. And I do have another article here. Although there has been rapid ice sheet thinning observed in West Antarctica, the East Antarctic ice sheets are indeed thickening, especially in the deep interior. We are going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today, and do check us out on our website at truthnews.com.au and check out our podcasts and a lot of recent interviews with some pretty interesting people. We've had a really good lineup over the past 6 to 8 months. So I do encourage you to actually go back and have a look at the archives, have a look at a lot of the recent shows, some really good material in there. Now, I'm just having a look at the information about the purported collapse of the West Antarctic ice sheet and finding, with a bit of research, that there is actually some conflicting expert opinion on this that indicates that that indeed, although there is evidence of collapse of this particular part of Antarctica, there is also evidence that the overall mass balance is increasing in Antarctica. And so when we see projections made about what's going to happen in the future, massive sea level rise, you have to understand that if you only take one part of the picture and you say, oh, well, this is collapsing, this ice is going to melt, therefore the sea level is going to rise, it's an incredibly narrow focus. But this is what is continually done when the news stories are tied to the PR agenda of the global warming scare to promote and indeed push through carbon trading schemes and carbon taxes. And so the evidence is cherry-picked. And, of course, it may be completely correct that this part of the Antarctica is actually having, you know, the ice is actually dropping off into the sea. But then we look at the bigger picture and we say, well, the rest of Antarctica, well, there's a lot of evidence that the actual ice mass is increasing. And, indeed, the overall ice mass is increasing. So a number of websites here providing some of this information, and these are all solid research sites, these are all solid scientific sites. And when I was reading here just before the break, it says here that parts of the East Antarctic ice sheet are indeed thickening, especially deep in the interior, which contrasts strongly with the observed rapid thinning of the West Antarctic ice sheet. And remember, the East Antarctic ice sheet is vastly bigger than the West Antarctic ice sheet. So if the East Antarctic ice sheet is thickening, that has a much more effect than the shrinking of the much, much smaller Western Antarctic ice sheet. But again, you know, if you Google this now and you put this into Google, you have a look, and you'll just see endless articles trumpeting this fear-mongering theme that the ice sheet is collapsing to the sea, and it's a catastrophe, and it's proof that we haven't done enough, and we have to act now. So again, you simply do the research, you simply look at the information, and you find, again, there's another factoid that was dropped into the media that has a completely different side to the story. And I was able to investigate this on my own. I don't presume to be a climate scientist. I don't presume to be an expert. I'm just giving you information that's freely available that is also from expert sources that contradicts the media spin, the headline, the soundbite, the meme that is being put forward by the mainstream media. And I do have another article here, actually, from whatsupwiththat.com, an excellent source of climate scepticism news. ICESat data shows mass gains of the Antarctic ice sheet exceed losses. The results of ICESat measurements are in from Antarctica, and this is actually from a couple of years ago, but it's still very relevant. It seems that the claims of ice mass loss in Antarctica have melted, and now that a continent-wide tally have been made. This was presented at a workshop in Portland, Oregon, and this is the one I was quoting to you from before. So I'm going to play to you a little video here that has some of the information presented. Here we go. Just waiting for that to start. Mass balance of Antarctic ice sheet, 1992 to 2008.
Maryland. That was before the launch of ICESat. Were any of you there at that workshop in Annapolis? Okay, a couple. Okay. Well, there's a lot of things that have happened since then. In those days, I thought that, well, first of all, I think it's fair to say we didn't know whether the Antarctic ice sheet was gaining mass or losing mass, and it's interesting that we're still having some disagreement about that. It's very interesting that some of the large negative values that have been published have gone away in the exercise. But the other thing that's happened is, I think as we learn more and more about it, I thought we'd launch ISAT and we'd publish some numbers and everybody'd agree and that would be it. But we're becoming more stringent in what we need to know in terms of the percentage of mass change. We used to think that if we knew the mass balance to plus or minus 5 or 10%, that would be good, but now we're down at the level where we really are looking for 1% changes in Antarctica, and those are significant. We're also looking more at the causes of the changes. So I'm going to present more detail on the altimetry measurements and just briefly mention this review paper we had in the survey of surveys in geophysics, which showed that there was a very large range of published values. We took a look at the input-output method and came up with a revised estimate that was not as negative. We referred to a preferred estimate, which was our radar altimeter results published in 2005, of a small negative mass balance. One of the things I'll show is a revision of those values. ISAT provides an incredible amount of detail of the elevation changes. This is the map of the changes measured, the height changes, a blow-up showing details of the changes taking place over the ice streams. This is Pine Island Glacier. We worry a lot about the calibration of ISAT. There's saturation corrections, there's changes in power, we previously applied a bias correction based on measurements of sea level ocean in the Arctic, which we stopped doing when we got the latest results of the latest calibrations from ISAT.
This is obviously very technical and probably hard to follow, but I think you can get a feel from listening to the scientists there that the whole field of research is not very clear on whether indeed there is an increase or a decrease, indeed how that is measured, or what in fact that even represents. And therefore, the trumpeting of claims about the collapse of Antarctica, the collapse of the ice sheets, really do not have any place in science. They are purely a media beat-up. So let's just move on with some other stories now. Let's have a look at vaccines in Australia. There has been some outrage, as we're told here from the Sunshine Coast Daily publication, over an anti-vaccination lobby which was put in place at a health expo. An anti-vaccination group exhibiting at a Sunshine Coast Healthy Lifestyle Expo has sparked national outrage. This is quite ridiculous. Really, it hasn't sparked national outrage. This is the way it's been beat up in the media. But let's just continue to read here from the article. An organizer of next weekend's event, Annie Infinite, says the expo has received so much hate mail since allowing the Australian Vaccination Skeptics Network a paid booth at the event, it has had to call police. Nearly 500 people have signed a petition for the expo to ban the AVN and its chief proponent, Merrill Dorey. Messages to the expo have included, "You should just die for supporting her," and "We are going to take you down, you natural therapist," some seen word there, starred out. Despite the barrage of complaints, Ms. Infinite said she would not cancel Ms. Dorey's stall without an official request in writing from an authority to do so. This is quite an interesting story because who are these shadowy people? I've no doubt who it is. These are lobby groups that are bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. There's no doubt about it. We're going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm just running through a story here about the vaccine lobby groups and the anti-vaccine groups who are clashing once again. And this is at an expo, a healthy lifestyle expo, in the Sunshine Coast region. Now, as you'll know, if you come from Australia, you'll know that that part of Australia is has a very high concentration of people who are interested in alternative lifestyles, who practice alternative medicine, and who have a healthy skepticism of government propaganda on vaccines. And so in that area, it's quite natural that this type of information would be well received. Now, just reading here from the article from the Sunshine Coast Daily, the organizer of the expo says she will not simply cancel the booking for the stall unless she is ordered to by some authority. And indeed, what authority can do that? We don't actually live in North Korea. I mean, we don't actually have a tyrannical fascist system where people can simply be told by some authority not to do things. We actually do have freedom, believe it or not, increasingly less, but you are actually allowed to have an opinion, believe it or not. And a lot of people are shocked by that, and a lot of these the medical fascists believe that that's not so, and they certainly think that people should just be ordered to be you know, gagged. And I've seen these discussions on Facebook, and they just, you know, quite blithely and blandly say that, you know, such and such a person should be just gagged, and you know, they shouldn't be allowed, and laws should be passed to prevent people from saying these types of things. And indeed, there has been comparisons of people who question vaccines to terrorism, and we'll perhaps get to that in this story. Australian Medical Association Queensland branch councillor and Nambour GP Wayne Hurdy has argued exhibitors should not need a government letter to turn away Ms. Dory. Indeed, here is the terrorism reference right here. Would they allow an Al-Qaeda group to promote terrorism on the Sunshine Coast? He asked. My view is the amount of damage terrorists do is comparable to the anti-vaccine group, as 10,000 children are affected. The scientific argument in favour of vaccination so far outweighs any illogical, irrational, hysterical argument the anti-vaccine lobby will generate. Now, this is an amazingly twisted, confused, and despicable statement here from a GP who I believe should be actually locked up for his antisocial, psychotic outburst, simply because it is actually so against... It's actually defamatory. I mean, to actually assert that someone who has questions about vaccines and simply wants to share information is actually a terrorist. That is just so outrageous and despicable. I'm lost at a loss for words. And this is a GP. Just continuing here from the article. The annual Healthy Lifestyle Expo attracts a range of natural healing and healthy lifestyle speakers each year. And we know that these are in the sights of the pharmaceutical industry of the medical fascists. They want to simply outlaw natural healing. They just want to make it illegal. They want to say, well, you can't do that. It's actually terrorism. You know, herbal remedies and homeopathy, and it's all terrorism. You're actually equivalent to Al-Qaeda. And, you know, this is where you've got to now understand the agenda that's been in place for the last 10, 15 years, since 9/11, where we remove all the normal protections in law for people, presumption of innocence, habeas corpus, all these types of things. We remove all the protections because we say there's this terrible threat called terrorism, which is on a higher order than all the other threats that we've ever experienced. Therefore, the normal protections of law don't apply. anyone that might be guilty of terrorism, you can lock them up and throw away the key. And everyone goes, yeah, great, yeah, lock them up. You know, we can't take any risks, you know, these terrible, evil people called terrorists. And those who don't understand the agenda, those who don't understand what fascism is all about, those who don't learn the lessons of history, don't realize that coming a little further down the track is that they will simply expand the definition of terrorism. And eventually, if you're caught littering, that'll be called terrorism. If you don't get your shots, that'll be terrorism. If you don't pay your tax on time, that'll be called terrorism. It's just a game of definitions. So the use of this word is incredibly sinister. And it is a red warning, a red alert, sirens going now in my head, thinking about the implications of people using this terminology as a pretext for silencing people who simply want to talk about natural health. Now, the organizer of the event has said, in defense of her little expo, she said, every year we do a topical discussion. And we thought, seeing as though the coast had the lowest vaccination rate in Australia, it would be a good one to discuss. We rang Queensland Health and other medical clinics and organisations, but there were no takers to talk on why you should vaccinate. We couldn't debate a topic we didn't have balance on, so we took it off. But one of the organisations asked if she could exhibit. We said she could, but we would put material next to her stall, sponsored by us, and populated with pro-vaccination material. I mean, here's someone who's actually coming from the right perspective, someone who's actually a civilized, decent human being, right? Sure, you know, we'll just contrast that with the other evidence, and it's free speech. We're all able to say what we need to say. Ms. Infinite said that the expo was not supporting Ms. Story, but did support the right to make choices. Sunshine Coast Public Health Unit Director Dr. Andrew Langley said Queensland Health received many requests for assistance with immunisation activities but was not always able to help. No, but they're certainly able to assist with vicious hate campaigns in order to silence dissent. See, they actually don't really have time to help with an open debate where both sides can freely present their information and may the best man win and may the public have the opportunity to make a choice. They don't have time for that, but they have time with their cronies to insinuate that people who simply have a point of view about natural health, who are concerned about the adverse effects of vaccines, are terrorists. So it's getting worse, folks. The suppression of people's health freedom is getting worse and worse and worse. Anyway, do check it out, and do visit, if you have a chance, do visit the Sunshine Coast Health Expo, which I believe is coming up very soon. In fact, if I have more information about it, I will put it on the site, and we may indeed even do another show on it. In fact, looking at this article, I noticed there is a large number of comments, and I'd imagine from my experience with this type of issue, there's probably a lot of community outrage. And here's one comment. I just picked the first comment I saw. People are at war with one another. Most of us are divided, distracted, and disrespecting each other's ways and views. Many people think they are right, all else are wrong. Most believe they are smarter, the rest not so bright. I don't think people like each other much anymore. Vaccinate, don't vaccinate. There are positives and negatives attached to both. Try evolving and get along. Everyone has a right to fight for what they believe in. A bit of emotional and mental maturity is needed. Well, I would say that to the GP there, who was just saying the most outrageous things. I mean, see, the average person is more mature than the average industry hack. And with that, we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's excellent to have your company today. We'll be back with more cutting-edge analysis after this short commercial interlude. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, let's turn to some more Australian news, and let's have a little look at one of the more shocking outcomes of the recent budget released by the government. And this is the Dole crackdown, where it's being claimed that people will have to wait 6 months in order to get the government benefit. This is quite an incredible development. I'm a little bit shocked myself at this. And look, I'm not a huge proponent of the nanny state. I'm not a socialist in my orientation toward these things, for many reasons. Not because I don't think safety nets are a good thing. I think it would be great if there was a safety net that was purely there to assist people, that wasn't attached to some malevolent government power grab. But unfortunately, the implementation of socialism always seems to have this problem of empowering the government to the point that the government actually becomes a threat. Despite whatever handouts it gives to people, whatever benefits it gives to people, the threat of the government is actually more significant. But what we see in Australia is quite an extraordinary development, where even though the amount of taxation is increasing, and we've seen also an attempt to bring in a special tax just to bring the budget into a surplus, even though taxes are increasing and we have incredible levels of taxation, government services are being cut back. And so the people are just being crushed. I mean, your ability to survive, with a decent quality of life, and I mean that in all senses, not just the most basic indicators, but a decent quality of life in the sense that you've got some freedom, you've got some free time, and you're able to make decent choices in your life without constant fear. That is actually being eroded on a daily basis in Australia. And the latest in this development is the release in the budget of the plan to bring in a six-month waiting period for the dole. And as it says here in this article from the ABC, from next year, unemployed people under 30 will have a six-month wait for the dole, and the Commonwealth will be able to cut them off for 6 months at a time if they are not earning or learning. Now, let me just play to you here a clip from our recent ABC news coverage of this story.
Earn or learn is the Abbott government's message to the youth unemployed. As part of the budget crackdown on welfare, job seekers under the age of 30 will now have to wait 6 months before receiving unemployment benefits. And when they do, they'll have to work for it. New Start will now no longer be available to people under 25, and instead they'll be eligible for the lower benefit rate of youth allowance. Youth welfare groups fear that the changes, in tandem with the loss of funding for outreach programs like Youth Connections, that thousands of young people could fall through the cracks. Matt Peacock reports.
It's going to be something that I don't think the Australian community has ever seen before.
These unemployed teenagers in Sydney's West are being told the bad news.
Where there'll be periods of payment when you're doing work for the dole, if you're not still in education. And then periods where there'll be no payments. And
in 6 months, the federally funded Youth Connections network of specialised agencies that have been helping them back into housing, education and work will be closed. Jessie Slager, nearly 6 months pregnant, is frightened.
I'm only young. I'm only 18. It's scary. It is.
So what have you been doing this year on Youth Connections with?
Looking for accommodation because we have been couch surfing.
I won't play that whole story, but clearly this is actually going to be quite a game changer for Australia. We do have growing unemployment. And bear in mind that the massive influx of foreign workers has made it harder and harder to get a job for people who are actually skilled, and has also decreased the sort of pay that you can get. On in the IT industry, it's just been savage. And this has been a deliberate government program, and it's a government program, no matter which government, whether it's left-wing or right-wing, they're flooding the company with low-paid workers. We're also being taxed like it's going out of style. I mean, we're just being taxed at higher and higher rates. And now they're going to cut back on the government benefit and the most important one, the unemployment benefit, and to basically to completely cut it off for people who are under 25, completely cut it off. And for people who are under 30, you'll have to wait for 6 months, which means, well, it's a joke, because that's when you need it the most, is that initial period, is when you're looking for a job. I mean, I've been on it a couple of times, and yeah, never for more than a few months at a time. But that's just a bridging thing. You need it in that initial period. I mean, to cut it off in the initial period when you need it most is just evil. And we are heading into some dark times, folks. I'm really very concerned, and I have to say, what's coming does not look pretty, especially as we see increasing evidence of a looming financial catastrophe, and as we've seen with the insurance shortfall on protecting banks against collapse. There could be people who become destitute when we have the next global financial crisis, and a lot of them won't even have access to government benefits. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a very, very scary thing to consider. Let me just play to you a clip here from Kevin Andrews, Social Services Minister, defending the new policy.
The federal government is telling the unemployed that its crackdown on the dole will make allowances for some people in difficult circumstances. From next year, the Commonwealth will be able to cut people under the age of 30 off the dole for 6 months at a time if they're not earning or learning. The Social Services Minister, Kevin Andrews, says the days of people expecting to do nothing and receive welfare benefits are over. But he won't say how many people are doing that and how much of a dent in the unemployment rate the government expects these changes to make. From Canberra, Alexandra Kirk reports.
The harsher measures the government's proposing for young job seekers from January have come in for wide criticism. The Business Council of Australia calls them pretty tough, noting also the budget's predicting the unemployment rate will rise. Young job seeker Eleanor accompanied the ACTU to Canberra today to express her concern. She says she's been looking for work for 2 months and also has a persistent weakened immune system.
If I can't get Centrelink, if I can't get Newstart, I won't be able to pay my medical bills, I won't be able to pay my rent, and I won't be able to afford to eat.
What's Tony Abbott got against unemployed people under the age of 30? How does he think young people live with no money for 6 months?
Opposition leader Bill Shorten and Greens leader Christine Milne have strongly criticised the plan to force job seekers under 30 to wait 6 months before they can qualify for the dole.
There are going to be young people where there are no jobs, even if they've got at 2 degrees, they still will not be able to get a job and they will be living on nothing.
And people under 25 will only get the youth allowance, which is less than the dole.
Just leave it there. So things are looking pretty bleak. We need to be thinking about alternative economies now. We need to be thinking about what we can do. We do not want to be relying on this bloated corpse of the nanny state, which it just keeps getting more and more money and is now just maggot infested. You know, there are parasites feeding off the bloated corpse of the nanny state. And those of us who've got our eyes open need to be aware of that. We need to go away from that. We don't want to be part of that anymore. We need to find alternative ways of supporting ourselves. We need to create our own economy. That's what I take from all this. Now, I just want to briefly want to bring up another story, which I've been discussing a little on Facebook, and I've only got a couple of minutes here to briefly broach it. There's an article that was published in mamamia.com.au that is extremely abrasive towards conspiracy theorists and conflates many different conspiracy theories together, which is a technique we've seen many, many times. It's a technique to smear those who have legitimate concerns and who are working very, very rigorously on truth and justice causes. It's an attempt to smear them by kind of merging them and conflating them with other people who have somewhat ludicrous ideas, and then saying, well, see, they're all the same. So this article here, "So You Thought Conspiracy Theorists Were Harmless, Think Again," is just such an article. And this article is in relation to a group of people that are known as the Sandy Hook Truthers. And these are people who, as it's described in this article, who believe that the Sandy Hook shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, was actually a hoax and never happened. And indeed, there are many, many interviews, many YouTube videos that do propose this meme, and they actually suggest that the grieving parents who were interviewed on television are actually actors. They've said that the people interviewed, the victims' families, are all actors and none of it is real. Now, in fact, that is just one tangent and one vein in the whole spectrum of people who have got questions about what happened in Newtown, Connecticut. But what they've done here in this article is they've conflated that, and they said, well, that is actually what Sandy Hook truthers are. And they said, see, these people are nuts. And they're nuts just like the people who question 9/11 and people who have thinks there's links between autism and vaccines. They're all the same. It's a dirty, rotten little trick that is played in the mainstream media. And I will provide the link to the article here. The point to take home from it is, yes, a lot of the material on YouTube is rubbish. The people who are saying that the grieving parents in Connecticut are actors, they've got no basis for that. They've got no evidence. It's just some guy making a YouTube video, making it up because he saw the guy smiled. So do consider that the next time you're browsing and come across these YouTube videos. We are going to break. When I come back, I'm going to be playing you some extended clips from ABC Catalyst program on cholesterol and statins. Stay with us.